Hello, patrons, and welcome back to Underwood & Flinch Underground. Now, before we begin this episode, I have a small sort of technical, I suppose, matter that I need to discuss with you. Every month, there are issues with credit cards being declined at Patreon. Often this is just a silly little matter that can be quickly remedied by checking your payment details and rectifying things accordingly. This month, there were rather a lot of these issues, so to highlight the problem and to alert people to what a Patreon card declining email looks like, I put up a post on Patreon last week, you know, to highlight the issue. Many people got back to me, having checked their payment details to confirm that everything was good, and I've no doubt that a great many others went off, you know, quietly and checked them, and, you know, it's all good. And I thank you all for doing that. Thank you very much indeed. I also thank those who were on the list of declined card patrons and found the error and then put it right. Thank you again very much indeed. However, there are still people outstanding on this list. Obviously, I'm not going to name names here. I'm just hoping that those people are listening to this podcast and that they will now take prompt action to set matters right. Basically, what happens every month is Patreon will send you an email stating either, you know, in the heading of the email, "Thank you for supporting your creators." This is the good one. This means that everything is well. But then there's the other one. And the other one has, first of all, it has your name. And then it reads, "We ran into an issue trying to process your pledge on Patreon." Now, this is the bad one. If you get this email, then you do need to read it and to follow the link inside to fix the problem ASAP. Or, I'm afraid, you will be deleted. I know. Now, nobody wants that, do they? Least of all me. So if you have received that email, the one stating that we ran into an issue trying to process your pledge on Patreon, then do, please, rectify it immediately. Thank you. Now, that said, here we are at Underwood & Flinch Underground, episode 12. Now, this episode was originally going to be bigger. I've been writing it for a long time, and there was another sort of section, another scene that was going to go into it of roughly the same size. But recording it and editing the recording would have meant that you would have had to wait another 3 or 4 days or whatever, and I really didn't want to do that because I know that you're all jonesing, to use an American verb which hasn't really caught on this side of the pond. You know, if I were to walk into a works canteen and say to a colleague, "Golly, I'm really jonesing for a currant bun," they'd probably look at me as if I were mad. But here in the podcast novel world, we all know this verb because Scott Sigler likes to use it with his junkies, who jones for their fix. So this then, episode 12 of Underwood & Flinch Underground, is your fix, you jonesing thing, you. And I am, of course, your junk-dealing man. So, because, as I say, those scenes are written in their final form, there will be another episode of Underwood & Flinch Underground very soon, like in less than a week. Oh, my goodness, yes. So that really should help with your jonesing problems. All right, then, enough chit-chat. Let's get on to Underwood & Flinch Underground episode 12, which concerns the plight of dear old Dame O'Sullivan, reluctant vampire and new acquaintance of Lady Rosamund Underwood. The last time we met them, Rose had basically taken Dame O under her wing and shown him how to feed on a taxi driver and promised to take him home. Well, in this episode, home is where they're headed. Underwood and Flinch, Underground. A novel written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. Episode 12. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Listener discretion is advised. Damo had lost track of where they were. He'd been looking out of the taxi window as they drove over the Thames on Waterloo Bridge, looking at the faces of people flowing past as they sped by them, each one of them a separate universe, teeming with concerns, loves, hates and fears. But they all had one thing in common. They were going home. Home to family, to lovers, to friends who cared about them. People with whom they would share the changes in life's seasons, until finally their time came to an end. But such things were not for him. He was no longer of their kind, and everything they took for granted, the simple, complex, beautiful and ugly little threads of life which they wove about them to make up the fabric of their human existence, things he too had had until so recently, were now lost to him. He was a different species. He was a monster. Rose had said that he was mourning the loss of his own life, and he saw now that she was right. His eyes lost focus, the people outside and the wide, dark river beyond, blurring into snapshots of his life that might have been. He and Ange having kids, himself as a dad, bringing them for visits to their cousins in Dublin. His face growing older, maybe losing his hair, but all the time watching his kids grow, and Ange aging with him, but her smile never aging, like her love for him. He closed his eyes. Rose was chatting amiably with the driver about the EU. The driver was fiercely negative of Britain's European partners, but made exceptions for Ireland and Germany, no doubt as a concession to his present passengers. Damo drifted in and out between his own thoughts and their conversation, until the car stopped and the driver announced that they had arrived. He looked out of the window. They were parked outside a closed underground station. Closed? He checked his watch. It was not yet 10 o'clock. Rose handed the driver a £10 note. Here, this is for you. Damo looked at the fare meter, which hadn't been activated and was still at zero.
You don't need to pay him, do you?
He asked Rose.
God no, said Rose. It is a tip. I pay him what the journey was worth, not what his damn machine would say if I let him put it on. The speed those things go up, it is all wrong. A journey should be priced according to distance, not seconds.
They got out, and she gave the driver a wave as he drove off.
Are you sure he's not going to remember this? Said Damo. I mean, what we did to him wasn't exactly forgettable.
Oh, he would be fine. Even now he has no recollection of us ever being in his cab.
Are you sure? I mean, you didn't give him a reminder or anything when we got out.
He does not need reminding. He was forgetting everything even as it was happening.
Do you think he remembered us drinking his blood when afterwards he was telling us about how Frau Merkel means well but needs to be shot?
Oh, yes not.
Rose nodded.
So?
Damo cocked a thumb at the underground station.
So what's the story with this place? Early closing, is it?
This is Aldwych, said Rose. It has been closed for over 20 years.
Really?
Damo looked again at the building. It didn't look derelict. Its ox-blood tiles shone as though they were regularly cleaned. Towards the top of the building, a large white sign read, Piccadilly RLY. Lower down were doors, which, like the tiles, were as clean as any you'd see on an operational station.
So what is it then? A museum or something?
No, they sometimes use it as a place to practice emergency services. Fire, ambulance, police. Such a commotion. But necessary, I suppose. They also use it for private functions and filming. They shoot movies here sometimes.
Oh, yeah? Who?
Who? I don't know. Film companies, I suppose. TFL hire it out.
Who's TFL? Transport for London, the people who own the station.
Well, that's interesting.
Damo turned to look down the street towards the river, a terrace of tall 3- and 4-storey buildings of mixed architecture, Georgian, Victorian, and what looked like a 1960s office building, ran down the road away from the station. In the middle of them was a Victorian Gothic building, too big for a residential house. It was more like a pocket mansion. He pointed to it and said,
"Ah, now, don't tell me that's your place."
"No, it used to be a hotel, but now it is a university building. All of these are now university buildings." She waved a hand to take in everything on the station side of the street. "A shame, but..." She shrugged. "No matter. In time, this will change. Everything does."
"But I thought you said this was where you lived. Does that make you like a really, really mature student?"
Rose, who had been unsure whether he was serious or not, laughed when he gave her a grin.
"Always you are joking, Damien. I never know when to take you seriously."
She sighed. "I have missed laughter so much. Yes, I do live here, but not in the student buildings. I live where you don't see." She went to the house to the left of the station. There were railings in front of it that enclosed steps leading down to a basement level. Rose pushed open a gate in the railings and gestured for Damo to follow her.
"Come."
Damo went after her. As he descended the steps, he looked through the uncurtained window into the basement apartment. The room inside was filled with tables and chairs, and on the wall was a whiteboard with some partially erased notes written on it. Rose stopped at the basement door and took out a key.
"Are you sure you're not living in a university?" said Damo. "I mean, that looks like a classroom to me."
"As I said," said Rose, opening the door, "I live where you don't see." She pushed open the door. Inside was a short corridor. To the left was the classroom. At the end of the corridor, a staircase led up into the rest of the building. To their right was another door. They stepped into the hall. Rose waited for Damo to enter, then shut the front door behind him.
"Daniel and I used to own all this building once. We moved here at the start of the war. As you see, next door was the station, which was used as a shelter in the Blitz. Plenty of sleeping meals for us, yeah?" "The sheltering Londoners sustained me in so many ways. Not just food, but..." She smiled wistfully. "They loved me."
"And that was nice of them," said Damo, sure that she was seeing the past through somewhat rose-tinted spectacles.
"The Blitz was a terrible time, Damien, but in other ways, a wonderful one, too. Nothing brings people together like adversity. I made some of the best friends of my whole life in those years. But now, they are all gone. Now there is only me."
She selected another key on her key ring and inserted it into the door on the right. She opened it, and behind was the sliding cage door of an old-fashioned elevator.
"This is my lift. I can only use it when the university people aren't around because it makes so much noise. I don't like to draw attention to myself."
"But they must know you're here."
Rose slid the cage door aside and stepped into the lift.
"On paper, yes. When the university started buying these buildings, they made me an offer for the place. By then, the whole building was mine, you see. Underwood left it to me in his will. But I had no use for the upper levels after he died. Or should I say, disappeared. He and I used to use the overground levels at night to entertain our human friends. It helped to project an air of normality to the world. But after he was gone, I never went there again. And so I accepted the university's offer. Daventry and West, Underwood's lawyers, acted on my behalf. I sold them a 100-year lease on everything above ground, including the basement, my only proviso being that the entrance hallway here is common access for both the university and the owner of the sub-basement.
That being you," said Damo, stepping into the lift after her.
"Yes," said Rose.
She closed and locked the outer door,
then drew the cage door back across. That being me. This lift once served the whole building, but I had the shaft closed off at this level when I sold the upper floors. You can see here on the control panel, 7 buttons for 7 floors. But the top 3 are now defunct. They do nothing. She pointed at the control panel. Damo saw how destinations had been engraved into the brass plate beside the buttons. Assuming they now stood at the level marked basement, below them were floors marked -2, -3, -4, and finally, station. Station? Wait a minute. Damo looked from the control panel to Rose and back again. What's that last button there?
At the station, said Rose.
You mean that place next door?
Yes, Aldridge. We have our own access.
You have your own access to an underground station?
Rose nodded. Yes, Daniel was one of the initial investors in the Piccadilly Railway. When it was in the planning stage, he sold the company the Strand Theatre, an older investment of his, which used to sit on the site where the station is now. He let them have it at a knockdown price, on condition that this house, which he already owned, could have its own private access to the platform levels.
Jesus Christ, said Damo. He was a real player, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He has other houses all over London with similar arrangements.
What? You mean houses like this connected to the underground?
Yes.
Wow, that is so cool.
It is, said Rose, her expression puzzled.
Why is it cool? What? You got your own private lift to an underground station, Rose. What is not cool about that?
To be honest, I have always been rather unclear as to what the word cool actually means. Through the decades, I have heard people say this about so many things. It means fashionable, yes?
Yeah, but not just that. Cool is pretty much anything that's fucking great. And this, he tapped the walls of the lift, this is fucking cool.
She smiled. I'm so glad you like it. Come, I show you my home. She pressed the button marked -2, and with a mighty hum, the lift began to descend.
Now, I show you this first floor just for the sake of the tour, but I don't use it myself. It was more his place than mine.
You mean Underwood's?
Of course, yes. Who do you think I mean?
Flinch? She spat the word out like a piece of rotten meat. Damo smiled.
You really hated old Arthur, didn't you?
Ugh, she grimaced.
He was an awful man. He encouraged Daniel to go to war. Not because he was especially patriotic or determined to fight the enemy. Oh, no. Arthur simply wanted to get Daniel away from me. To have him all to himself so they could go off killing together. He never liked me, and I never liked him.
The lift came to a halt behind another door, and Rose slid the cage aside.
Welcome to my parlour.
Damo raised an eyebrow.
Said the spider to the fly. You're not going to eat me now, are you, Rose?
Rose smiled.
Not tonight, my dear. But if you play your cards right.
She unlocked and opened the door and extended her hand for him to go first. Damo stepped out cautiously into a dank and musty-smelling hall. His nocturnal vision showed him the walls were papered with dark flock wallpaper, mottled and peeling. Some places were scarred with black mould that ran in rashes up to where cobwebs clung in the corners of the ceiling. 2 rats scampered away from the sudden disturbance. Rose stepped out behind him.
I've let this part of the house go a little, I'm afraid. Daniel always used to complain that I moved his things when I tidied and that he could never find them. So, when he left, I stopped tidying. I wanted everything to be as it was when he left, so that when he returned after the war, everything would be...
Her voice faltered for a moment. She pursed her lips into a smile and finished.
Everything would be where he left it.
She looked around.
I should have kept it clean, I know, but for so many years I could not bear to come up here. Even now it fills me with sadness.
She led the way down the hall. Damo followed, wrinkling his nose at the smell.
Well, that's understandable.
Yes, for me this floor is like a haunted house. The ghosts of who we were still walk here. The carpet was soft and damp under Deimos' feet, but dirt and long-dried rat feces crunched as he walked.
It's nice.
She laughed.
No, it's not, but thank you for saying so. You're very sweet. Please, this way.
She led the way down to two double doors, which she pushed open. This is the living room. She entered, and Damo followed her in. Cobwebs trailed from the tops of the doors, breaking and drifting down to brush their hair and faces. Damo swept them away, looking around with a mixture of fascination and revulsion. The room was long and broad, with oak-panelled walls that had to be at least 15 feet high. A crystal chandelier hung over the centre of the room, shrouded in cobwebs. The luxurious sofas and armchairs looked as though they could have been brought in from the Victoria and Albert Museum, but for the fact that they were blanketed in dust and peppered with rat feces. Damo tried to smile.
Wow, this is, or was, quite a pad, Rose.
Yes, she replied vaguely. He looked over to see she was looking up at a portrait that hung over the fireplace. The subject was a woman in Georgian evening dress. Damo came over to Rose's side. Though the detail of the portrait was lost under a sheen of dust, the radiant beauty of the subject staring out at him was barely diminished.
"Who's the bird?"
he asked.
"You think she is attractive?"
Damo shrugged.
"Sure, but who is she?"
"An unknown sitter for the artist Thomas Gainsborough. That's what Daniel told me anyway. He said he bought it purely for aesthetic reasons and the fact that it was a Gainsborough. But one night, Arthur took great delight in letting it slip that Daniel had had the painting commissioned by Gainsborough himself because the woman, a music hall performer, bore a powerful resemblance to his first great love, Martha. You could always count on Arthur to try to put the cat among the pigeons. He no doubt thought I would fly into a jealous rage, but I never gave him that satisfaction."
"Sure, if you don't like the painting, why don't you just sell it? It must be worth a fortune."
"I'm sure it is. But it is like I said, I always wanted this room to remain as it was when he left." Then she gave a wry smile. "However, if what you say is true and Underwood really is back after years of deceiving me, then perhaps I will give Sotheby's a call. Either that, or I find Underwood and break the damn thing over his head. Whichever gives me the more satisfaction." Damo's eye was then caught by a cobweb-shrouded object on a table near the fireplace.
"And what's that thing?" he asked.
"Oh, that," Rose said with an air of disdain. "That is the magnetophone, an early kind of reel-to-reel tape machine that Flinch bought to record Daniel's life story."
"Really? Do you still have the tapes?"
"No, Arthur took them with him when they left. Perhaps he already knew that his master had no plans to return and didn't want to leave them here with me." Damo turned at a sudden sound above him to one side of the fireplace and spotted a large rat scurrying along the top of a bookcase.
"Jesus, Rose," he said, taking a step back. "You know, you say you want to keep this place undisturbed, but would you not count rats as a bit of a disturbance?"
"They bother you?"
"Oh, yeah, of course they do. They bother everybody, don't they? They carry diseases. They shit and piss everywhere. Well, you can see that for yourself."
"Oh, here perhaps, but not in the part of the house where I live."
"All right," he said sarcastically. "You mean you managed to keep them out somehow?"
"No, they come and go as they please, but they always observe my wishes."
"What? You mean to say they run around down there, but they don't shit and piss like?"
He gave a snort of disbelief.
"I have to say, Rose, that sounds kind of hard to believe."
"Be that as it may, it remains the truth. I tell them not to, and so they do not." At that, Damo laughed.
Oh, come on, Rose. You're telling me that you've toilet trained a bunch of wild vermin?
I resent the term vermin.
But what would you call them?
I call them Oddfellow.
Oddfellow? I thought that was the name of the rat you had in your pocket earlier on.
She nodded. Yeah, he was Oddfellow. Then she pointed to the rat on the bookcase. And she is also Oddfellow. They are all Oddfellow. Not for the first time that evening, Damo wondered if he hadn't hitched his cart to the weirdest horse in the stable. He frowned.
I'm sorry, Rose, but I don't think I understand you.
Oh, so I show you. She turned to the rat on the bookcase.
Oddfellow.
Rose clapped her hands and the rat looked down at her.
Come.
Immediately, the rat disappeared from view. Damo could hear its clawed feet scampering through the innards of the bookcase. But that wasn't the only place that now resonated with the sounds of movement. His heightened hearing could detect it from all around the room, as if the walls themselves were alive with vermin. Then the bookcase rat came scurrying out and ran across the carpet to Rose. It was joined by the rats Damo had seen out in the hall. And now others were emerging from all around, all of them streaking across the floor towards Rose. Damo felt small bodies brushing past his ankles, and he jumped up onto one of the sofas, watching in horrified disbelief as a swarm of bristling black bodies came pouring across the floor to gather and swirl at Rose's feet.
"Cheney Mac!" he cried. "It's a fucking army of the bastards!"
Rose sank to her knees and let the rats flow about and onto her.
No, Damien, they are Oddfellow. They love me and I love them, just as you will come to love them and they you. Like fuck I will!
Rose laughed as the rats poured over her like a living gown of shimmering black fur.
Damien, you're so funny. So funny.
Yes, patrons. That Damo's a real laugh a minute, isn't he? Almost as much fun as Rose. Join me next time, because the fun in Underwood and Flinch Underground is only just beginning.
The music you're listening to is Ahmad Armour by Farid Farjad, courtesy of Taraneh Records, specialists in Persian music. You can find sale links on my websites, Mike Bennett Author and underwoodandflinch.com.
So there it was, listeners, Underwood and Flinch Underground, episode 12. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Underwood and Flinch 13 will be, as I said at the beginning, with you in less than a week. So don't get too jonesed, if that works. It probably doesn't, does it? But anyway, don't forget to drop by to Patreon from time to time, you know, whenever you sort of feel the urge, just to simply click that little heart button and like a post or leave a comment. Because it's engagement, isn't it? It's engaging with me and other patrons, and it's fun. Like wearing a gown of rats is fun, isn't it? I certainly enjoy it. Anyway, I'll see you next week in Underwood and Flinch Underground, episode 13. But from me for now, until the moon rises again over Underwood and Flinch, farewell.
This podcast has been brought to you today by you. Yes, you, and all my other sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on, be it on paper or on podcast, is as a result of your contribution.
I did a mini fist pump there, but obviously you couldn't see it.